Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Brooklyn-based pianist and composer Nick Sanders. This young jazz talent is making some waves in the world of music and jazz on Sunnyside Records, and a brilliant jazz pianist, Fred Hirsch, is producing his records. He was born and raised in the jazz-rich New Orleans, graduated from the New England Conservatory, and has the whole world ahead of him. During our interview, he opened up about his life behind the jazz keys and what is possibly in store for him, along with much, much more. Dig it, my friends.
Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Hey, man, good. I want to start off, first of all, by thanking you for taking a little time to talk with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, no, likewise. Thanks for reaching out, and glad you're doing this.
I'm going to go ahead and dive right in here with you. Your latest album, You Are a Creature. Talk to me a little bit about this album, how it's going, some of the creative energy that went into it, how you're promoting it.
Yeah, so You Are a Creature is basically a collection of music that I had written over the past maybe like a year and a half or so.
Yeah.
I think it's a big step forward in terms of the trio's development. From the first album, our first record was called Nameless Neighbors, and that was released in 2012. So it's been about 2.5 years or so since then. And during that time, Henry Fraser, who plays bass, and Connor Baker is the drummer, they were living in Boston because I met them in Boston. And then I moved to New York shortly after graduating from New England Conservatory, and I got signed to Sunnyside Records, so I moved to New York. That was one of the main reasons why. And then they also moved shortly after, and so it's been really great to be kind of in a new musical environment, I think.
Yeah.
And we've also, you know, we've been doing our, you know, like, I'm doing my music with the trio, but we're also involved in other projects as well, so... we're even in certain bands, like the trio is the rhythm section for other groups. So it's interesting to play. I'm still playing with Henry and Connor, but not in the same setting as I would be with my music.
Sure.
So that's kind of the crash course, I guess. I think that in terms of each musician, I think that just the level of maturity has gotten is much higher. If you listen to our first album as opposed to You Are a Creature, like, for instance, Connor's drumming is just a whole different, it's completely different. He's using a whole kind of new sound world, which I think really lent, it just helped the creative aspect of it even more. And it was almost easier to kind of, think of new ideas and create new music. So, and also at that time, Henry had just got a new bass. I just remember that.
Nice.
So that was great. That was good for him, you know, because he'd been wanting to get a new instrument. So that really helped him kind of stretch out and do his thing. And just really the whole thing was really comfortable, and working with Fred Hirsch again and James Farber, was the first time I've worked with James, because he did the sound, and I think that having them in the studio was just an amazing experience and made it really it made the music just breathe really easily, and just the whole project was really smooth. So
there's no way it couldn't be with those kinds of minds there, you know, looking after everything for sure. Let me ask you this: with Nameless Neighbors, it was your first one out of the gate. Was that kind of a good blast-off point for you? Did you get some jitters out? You said you were more comfortable with this release. What was your thought on that?
It was actually the first record was really interesting experience for me, just on so many levels. I mean, I maybe about a year or so prior to releasing Nameless Neighbors and kind of and actually just starting to work on the material of that record. I felt like personally I'd really come into my own place, like having my own voice, and like I think I recognized that, which was a really good place to be, because I felt very confident in the music. And also, I mean, I had just basically started playing with Henry and Connor like fairly recently before that. And all this new, the new music that I was writing for my first album, I was kind of playing with them. And it was great because it was a very collective thing. You know, I mean, I write all the music, but it's, you know, on Nameless Neighbors, as on You Are a Creature, there's a lot, there's tons of input from the rhythm section, you know, from Henry and Connor, that really helped me. It's not like every single idea was mine. Like, it was very open, kind of like an open forum, and we could kind of bounce ideas back and forth off of each other. So it was really great. But yeah, going back to the question specifically, yeah, I definitely felt that it kind of, I needed to get this music out. And then once that happened, it was great because then it just kind of inspired me to work harder and write more music and try to do, try to really expand on what we had started, you know? So.
Absolutely. Well, let's go back to the beginning of your lineage in your life. You were born and raised in New Orleans. Is it kind of a given that jazz was going to be a part of your life with that kind of environment?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. It's something that I've definitely thought about a lot. I think growing up in New Orleans, I don't think it's a given. I certainly don't think, in terms of, like, you know, if you're from New Orleans, then you're just instantly going to be, and you play music, then you're just instantly going to be a jazz musician. I don't think that that's necessarily. But no, I mean, like, for me, when I started playing piano when I was 7 years old. I was heavily classically trained. My second grade teacher put on a play called Of Mice and Mozart, and I got exposed to, more heavily than I had before, like Mozart's music and Beethoven and just other classical composers. So I really started getting into that, and I didn't even really start playing improvised music of any kind until I was probably about 16 or 17 years old.
Yeah.
But... you know, growing up in New Orleans and, you know, going to, you know, the French Quarter or going to parades. And then also I went to the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts in high school, which was also a big influence. Actually there I studied classical music. And then my last year I studied jazz, the last 2 years. So anyway, but yeah, I think that, you know, in terms of a reflection of New Orleans in my music, I don't necessarily think that a lot of people that would hear my music would be like, oh, like, he's from New Orleans, definitely, and this is, he has, like, a New Orleans, like, sound, you know?
Sure.
I take influences from everything in my life. I mean, my mom was from Cuba, and she used to play for me tons of, you know, recordings of, like Buena Vista Social Club and, you know, just other, like Latin music. And I don't think that, you know, again, if people hearing my music, I don't think they would necessarily think it was that either. So it's like, you know, but I think in terms of getting into improvising, I think New Orleans is a great place to be.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, it is the birthplace, the so-called birthplace of jazz. And, you know, I probably wouldn't have, might not have necessarily started playing improvised music if it wasn't for living in New Orleans. So,
sure.
And in that sense, I am very grateful, and I love New Orleans.
So are there any musicians or any albums that really kind of swayed you into a jazz persuasion?
Yes. Let's see. I would have to say Thelonious Monk, there was these series of, like, solo piano recordings that he had recorded that I had checked out in high school, which was awesome. Like Alone in San Francisco, and then the solo record he did, I think it's like it was recorded in Paris, but I think the record is called Solo Monk or something.
Yeah.
That was great. Another one was Bill Evans. Portraits in Jazz was like a huge, I just fell in love with it completely. I was just like, this is amazing. It's so great. That was a big one. And then Coltrane, A Love Supreme. I remember hearing that, really. I think that, honestly, that was like the kind of aha moment for me when I was listening. Because at the time when I was in New Orleans, when I heard that record, I was in the classical music department. And I remember when I heard that, I sat down and listened to the whole thing through. And I was just like, this is incredible. Like the kind of, the type of energy that I heard in the music was really a different kind of energy than from playing classical music.
Yeah.
And I think they totally, you know, both of those kinds of music, they can have their own, in their own right, can have extremely emotional or playful or, you know, you can, the list goes on of things that each music can convey.
Yeah.
But for me, Coltrane, Love Supreme was really a big one for me. And then, Ornette Coleman, The Shape of Jazz to Come was also another record that I really loved. And that album actually doesn't even have piano on it.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great. I think it influenced me just as much as any other, kind of music or album that I've heard. So those would be a very small few. Of course, Miles Davis, but Kind of Blue and those the second quintet albums with Herbie Hancock and Ron Carter and Tony Williams were also really, really great. So
yeah,
those are a few.
Those are very, very pivotal and instrumental. You know, sometimes I wish Coltrane could have stuck around, not only to see where his music would have gone, but I think he needs to understand that album has moved so many people, especially musicians, in profound mm-hmm. ways. And I hope that he did understand that because it was huge. For sure.
Yeah. I hope so too.
without a doubt. So, talk to me about your time at the New England Conservatory. That had to be a huge growth period for you.
Yes, it was amazingly huge. It was great. I loved NEC. NEC was like a huge part of my life. I just graduated only, you know, about 2 to 3 years ago, so it's still like I feel kind of fresh out of school still sometimes, a little bit. But, because up until that point, it's like now I live on my own and like I have to like pay my own rent and like, you know, I'm out of school. It's like, whoa, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's great. I love being out of school. But anyway, NEC. NEC was great. When I got there, let me just say this. The main thing I love about NEC, or at least when I was there, is that they were so open about the direction that I chose. Whatever direction anyone wants to go in, you can do that there. You know, there's no, like, necessarily strict curriculum structure. It's like, you know, for instance, like you have to learn like 150 standards and it has to be these standards and like you have to play them this way and like it has to be in this and you have to play them in these keys. It's like, it's like not that at all.
Yeah,
it's very much about exposing you to all different kinds of music. And I think that, you know, like I was in the jazz department, but I mean the school has an incredible classical department as well, and they have another department called Contemporary Improvisation, which is kind of like, you know, there are people playing like Balkan brass music and like, you know, I don't even know, like folk, like country inspired music. Like it was just like an amazing place where there's just, and also, I remember this one band in particular, Gorilla Toss, is like this crazy, like hardcore, like not almost like noise music, like face melting, like rock, crazy rock music.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point I'm driving home is, yeah, there's just so many influences there. And that was also great because I got to study with Danilo Perez. That was my first main teacher. It was Danilo Perez and Jerry Braganzi, which was great. That's the other thing too about NEC that was so good is I could study with people that weren't just pianists. Like I studied with Cecil McBee, I studied with John McNeil, Jerry Braganzi, and you know, George Garzone, just to name a few. And none of them are, their main instrument isn't piano, but I got so much out of that as well.
Yeah.
And then it was awesome because my senior year, Fred Hirsch joined the faculty.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like, I freaked out because I remember growing up, I'd listened to Fred a bunch and I've always loved Fred's playing for sure. I mean, I didn't get into Fred's stuff like until later, after high school.
Yeah.
But, and that goes too with like, you know, people like, I don't know, Brad Meldow and Jason Moran and, you know, but anyway, yeah, he came on the faculty, my senior year, and it was amazing because at the time I was like, oh, like, I think it would be so amazing if I just found out he was joining the faculty. Like, oh, this is incredible.
Yeah.
So that really great. We really worked a lot on like my solo sampling because I mean I think Fred is one of the best solo sampling. So like, yeah, it was just kind of an amazing experience. And then Jason Moran came on the faculty when I started my master's degree there. So I was studying with Jason and Fred, which couldn't have been a better, in my opinion, couldn't have been a better combination because they're such a great contrast in musical style.
Yeah.
But they both kind of contributed really interesting and like fresh ideas into my musical development and like musical world. So it was actually it was a great thing for me. And I guess, the whole thing with how I got signed to Sunnyside too is because I basically brought my trio that I'd been playing with and I played some of the music, you know, that we had been working on for Nameless Neighbors. We didn't even know that at the time, but it was new music that I was working on. And Fred was, you know, he was there and he was like, man, like you guys sound amazing. Like you guys should record an album and like, I'll be your producer. And I was like, oh, okay, great. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So, and then, you know, because of that, Fred presented that, he sent an email and said, hey, like, you should really listen to this, and if you like it, you know, tell me what you think, and so Sunnyside really, really dug it, and thankfully, because I was pitching the album to a bunch of different labels, but Sunnyside was my top choice, I guess.
Yeah.
So I was really, really pleased that they liked it, and sign me so I could be able to make this music and let other people share it with people, you know.
So do you think being a multiple year winner of the Marion and UB Blake International Piano Award was a big step for you to get to that point to sign on and kind of get a launching pad for your career?
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, it's interesting with that. I don't even really, I don't think I realized how great of a thing that was at the time. I came across it online or something and I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like I'm going to send in some stuff. And I did. And then they ended up, I ended up getting the award and it was awesome.
Right.
And I think that just kind of served more again as more inspiration to continue working really hard and like kind of giving me more, just, you know, more, how do I say, like, and not ammunition, but I guess more just like inner drive, you know,
yeah,
to keep working. So
absolutely. So you've kind of bounced around. I mean, coming from New Orleans and coming up to the East Coast, do you like living in Brooklyn now?
Yes, I do. And of course, there's cons. There's pros and cons to living in New York for sure, but. But, yeah, I mean, obviously the pace of life here is completely different than in New Orleans, that's for sure. I mean, it's way larger than New Orleans as a city. I mean, just Brooklyn alone, I mean, not just excluding Manhattan and, you know, Queens is huge. Brooklyn is huge. It's cold here.
Yeah.
That's another thing. All right, now I'm looking at my window right now, and there's snow everywhere. But living in Brooklyn has been great. I think that, well, living in New York in general has just been awesome. When I first moved here, it was a little tough because, you know, I had to figure out a way to, you know, pay my rent and stuff, which now what I do now is I teach private piano lessons to students, which is awesome. I love teaching. And so that's kind of what I'm doing on the side, aside from playing gigs and stuff. So, That's really great, actually, because I'm very fortunate, I think. At first, I had to hustle a lot to kind of find people that are interested in taking lessons. But now that's like I'm in a good place now with that. And it's great because the schedule that I have allows me to have it's like pretty flexible. So it allows me a lot of time to like compose and practice. And, you know, it's just good. I think it's also just good for my state of mind. I don't get too stressed out because I think inherently living in New York can be pretty stressful.
Yeah.
It's just so crazy and people are constantly moving and going around all the time. And, you know, I don't have a car. Like, most people don't have a car. So we all take the subway and, you know, it just takes a lot of, there's just a lot more energy that you have to expend to like get to places and, you know, et cetera. So, but I love living in New York, and Brooklyn especially is great. There's tons of really good places to eat and a lot of jazz musicians, and not only jazz musicians, but just musicians in general live here in Brooklyn. So I've been able to kind of connect with a lot of different musicians, from like different scenes of music. Like right now I do my music with my trio, but I'm also in like some hip hop bands and doing some hip hop projects, which is actually a blast and like super fun. Kinds of music too. So it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool. So you kind of touched on Fred, with Fred. What is that like? I mean, going from being a fan of his to getting educated and to him being a producer for you, talk to me a little bit about him.
I first met Fred. I was a senior at NEC. I was my last year in undergrad. And I remember going in to my first lesson I ever had with him. Because, we had just found out that he was teaching. And, you know, I was like, oh, I'd like to be in Fred Hirsch's studio. And so I think all the pianists actually that were at NEC, or most of them, were able to study with him, but especially because I was a senior, I think I had some sort of like priority because I was my last year before. Yeah. Well, I mean, I did do my master's, but at the time I didn't know I was going to do that. So anyway, it was great. I went into my first lesson. I was super nervous because, you know, Fred has also been known as like an amazing teacher as well. Like he had taught Brad Meldow and like Ethan Iverson and, you can probably like even, I think Aaron Parks too. Danilo Perez actually worked with Aaron Parks. I'm pretty sure about that. But anyway, I mean, the amount of great pianists that he's influenced was kind of intimidating.
Yeah, sure.
In a sense. So, and I didn't really know anything about him. Like, I didn't know if he was going to be like really mean or like really intense or whatever. And so, yeah, I went in and I just played a few tunes and he was really, really relaxed the whole time and like very real. He was very real towards me. And not in a bad way, though. It was like really great. Like he was very complimentary. But then like of my playing and he's, said a lot of really nice things. But then he would also say, here's like something you can work on. But he was very like... He seemed to care a lot, which makes a difference when you're working with someone. And especially someone like him, I was just so thrilled that he was very invested and, like, really seemed to want the best for each person, that he worked with. So, but the thing is, like, I had only played solo piano for him in lessons. And then when I started doing my master's degree, I was actually thinking about coming to Manhattan School of Music, but I stayed at NEC because Fred was going to stay there. And Jason Moran had just left MSM and came over to NEC. And they had also given me a full scholarship. So I was like, okay, like I'll just, stay another 2 years and like just keep getting better, before moving on. But then I guess Fred had known me, then for about 2 or 3 years. And then I think it was like my last semester in graduate school where it was the first time when he actually heard me play my own music with a piano trio setting. And he was like, wow, like this is great. Like this is you know, he was always very, like, he liked my solo playing a lot, and I had played a few of my tunes solo piano, but here, when he heard me with my trio, he was like, this is really, you know, he had never heard it before, so he was, like, really into it, I guess, and so that's kind of what happened.
Right on. You know, now that your career is taking off, a lot of things are happening, is there anybody on your list that you would really like to play with?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm just like, I don't think so. I have no one in particular. I mean, I'm just down to play with anyone that's like really enthusiastic, and if I like the music, and I'm not necessarily too concerned with playing in any one specific thing or not. I would love to do that if the opportunity presents itself, of course, and I'm into the music and it's cool. But no, I'm very focused on my own music right now and just doing my own projects.
Absolutely.
But I would love to. Yeah, I mean, certain people, like I do love playing with George Garzon. I used to play in New York actually when I was going to school in Boston, but I played a lot with George in New York at that time.
Yeah.
In his band, and that was always a blast because, like, I knew him personally, and, like, he was one of my teachers, so that was really cool. But, yeah, I don't know. I can't really think of anyone in particular, though, that I would be, like really dying to play with. I just think that I'm down to play with anyone as long as, you know, I really – they have, like, a good attitude, and, like, the music is good, and, you know, they want to, like, work together to create something really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the greatest thing about waking up every day for you?
That's a great question. The greatest thing about waking up for me is definitely the fact that I know that I can continue to write music and create art, I guess, essentially.
Yeah.
And that people are supporting me, and I have you know, people that are helping me to do that and that are supportive. And it's that, I think. And also, you know, I love teaching. I love what I do also with teaching. So I'm just very fortunate to be able to, you know, make a living and be extremely happy by doing what I love to do.
Absolutely.
More than anything in the world.
Yeah, cool.
So that's... I always try to keep that in mind, too.
Yeah.
Whenever, you know, something like that, or have had, like, a not the greatest day, it's like, you know, I'm extremely thankful.
So if you could get into a time machine and travel back in time and meet any jazz musician, who would it be, and what would you want to talk to them about?
Oh, man, that's such a hard question. I've thought about this question. Oh, man. I guess I would have to be... Does it have to be just one?
it could be a group.
Okay. Okay. Then it would have to be... I would go back and definitely I would like to see Thelonious Monk and talk to him if I could.
Yeah.
That would be... really cool. I would like to, especially with Monk, I would love to ask him about and hear from him, from his own, you know, his own mouth, basically, what, how he views composition. And, you know, like a lot of the music that he wrote, was it something that he had really thought about a lot, or did it just kind of one day he just sat down and just wrote out like, you know, like Hackensack or, you know, Nutty or Crepuscule with Nelly, and any of the Monk tunes, basically.
Yeah.
Or like Panonica, whatever. I mean, you take your pick, but that would be something. And then I would just love to see him play solo. I would really like to see him play solo. That would be really great.
Yeah.
So I guess it would probably be Thelonious. Ultimately, would be Monk, but then Bill Evans is arguably on the same place there too.
Yeah.
But I think with Bill, I actually did this really cool tribute to Bill Evans at Fairfield University about a year ago or so. And I think there's a lot of footage recorded footage actually of like some of Bill Evans' like rehearsals and stuff that I've seen, which is really interesting and cool. And there's just a ton of there's a lot of live footage of him playing too. But I would love to I would love to go back and and talk with Bill Evans too about how you know, how classical music actually influenced him. I think that in his own playing, there's a ton of, like, it comes across a lot of times very kind of impressionistic, especially with, like, the chord voicings and stuff. And not only that, I would love to talk to Bill Evans about kind of his own thoughts about how he developed his chordal language, just harmonically. I think he was, like, an extremely huge and instrumental part of advancing the harmonic palette of the piano.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if you listen to people like Herbie Hancock, like in the mid-60s, like he was using all of these new kind of voicings that I think he even at some point has stated that Bill Evans was like, you know, the person who basically created this kind of language. Yeah. So, like chordal language, specifically harmonic and chordal language. So that would be something I would love to kind of ask Bill Evans about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That'd be cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So let's say we catch up here in about 10 years and I basically say, man, it's been a while. What's been going on? What are you going to be happy to tell me?
I just would like to say that I don't know what that's going to be like in 10 years. But yeah, I understand the question. I think I would say, you know, Joe, I'm doing good. I'm doing very well, and I'm happy to say that I'm still doing the same thing that I was doing 10 years ago. And except that, you know, my music has been able to reach more people, and I've had more opportunities to play my music for different audiences, and that I've created other more music or done some different projects, and you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, in some ways, I'm already living my dream, you know, but I really want to continue to expand on that and just work really hard and try to create the best music I can.
Sure.
So,
what's the last jazz album you listened to? You spun maybe multiple times.
The one that I was really into recently was the Avant Garde. It's with John Coltrane and Don Cherry.
Yeah.
Ed Blackwell. It's basically Ornette Coleman's like rhythm section plus Don Cherry and John Coltrane.
Yeah.
And actually there's a track on You Are a Creature called The Blessing. It's the last track.
Yeah.
Which is an Ornette Coleman tune, which I decided to play because I love that tune, and they play that the recording of that particular tune on the Avant Garde is really great. So that's kind of one of the last albums I've been checking out, jazz albums, I guess, recently.
Yeah, cool. So I'm going to end this with a question that is going to be a short answer, but it's going to pack a lot into it. And I want you to define who you are in the length of a tweet. Tell me who you are. Like if someone wanted to say, what's Nick's story? Who is this guy? And you can say, bam. This is it.
Well, I would just say I'm a human being living on this earth, just trying to do what I love to do and to be happy. I don't like to make comparisons. You know, I never think of myself in relation to anyone else. I try to refuse to measure myself as part of anything in particular. And I just, you know, want to be happy and create music that people will love. And, you know, and I think my music is a reflection of me. And it's kind of like what I live for and what I love to do. So I guess that's all I would say.
Yeah, you nailed it, man. That's good. That's good stuff.
Nick, man, it was a pleasure to speak with you. I love your music. Keep on keeping on, man. It's good stuff.
Oh, Joe, thank you so much. I deeply appreciate you having me and taking your time to do this. You're the man. So thanks a lot.
Right on.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over America, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Nick for his music and valuable time to talk with us. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino on the iTunes Store. And for all things Neon Jazz, you can always visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.